Do you want to know what it's like to hang out with MS-13 in El Salvador? How the Russian mafia fought battles all over Brooklyn in the 1990s.
Well, what about that time I got lost in the Burmese jungle hunting the world's biggest meth lab? Or why the Japanese Yakuza have all those crazy dragon tattoos? I'm Sean Williams.
And I'm Danny Gold. And we're the host of the Underworld Podcast. We're journalists that have traveled all over, reporting on dangerous people and places. And every week, we'll be bringing you a new story about organized crime from all over the world.
We know this stuff because we've been there. We've seen it. And we've got the near misses and embarrassing tales to go with it. We'll mix in reporting with our own experiences in the field, and we'll throw in some bad jokes while we're at it.
The Underworld Podcast explores the criminal underworlds that affect all of our lives, whether we know it or not. Available wherever you get your podcasts.
On February 9th of 2004, 21-year-old UMass student Maura Murray drove from her dorm in Amherst, Massachusetts to the White Mountains of New Hampshire.
At approximately 7:27 p.m., Maura spun out her 1996 Saturn on a hairpin turn on Route 112 in North Haverhill. There has never been a credible sighting of Maura since.
Maura is 5'7" tall. She weighs 120 pounds, and she has brown hair and hazel eyes.
If you have any information regarding Maura's disappearance, please submit it to us,
the Murray Family, at MauraMurrayFamilyDirect@gmail.com,
or the New Hampshire State Police Cold Case Unit.
This is Missing Maura Murray.
Welcome back to Missing Maura Murray. I'm Tim, here today with Lance. Lance, how are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you today?
I'm doing well, Lance. For this episode, we speak about Brandon Lawson, the disappearance of Brandon Lawson, with case advocate and family advocate Jason Watts, as well as his dad, Brandon's dad, and his ex, LaDessa.
It was incredible to speak with Brandon's mom, his dad, Bradley, LaDessa, his wife, and see his kids. A couple of his boys came on. That was really touching, but I get a big smile on my face when I think about this episode because of all of the positive energy this family has, and they're not allowing this to beat them down. And it was incredible to see LaDessa and Brandon's parents interact. They still get along. They still put all their energy into finding out what happened to Brandon, and they're not losing hope. And probably one of the best conversations that we've ever had on this Get Vocal True Crime Thursday night.
And we did this live on Get Vocal. We do these live shows every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern.
And we recorded this on November 19th, 2020, which was one day after Brandon Lawson's 34th birthday on November 18th.
And for anybody who's not aware, he's missing since August 8th of 2013 from San Angelo, Texas. He is a white male, 5'9", 230 pounds. And if you have any information, please contact the Coke County Sheriff's Office at 325-453-2717.
Okay, everybody, thanks a lot for listening. Of course, we are celebrating Brandon Lawson's birthday tonight. His 34th birthday was yesterday on November 18th.
And we are here being joined by Brandon's dad, Bradley, and by case advocate, Jason Watts. How's it going, fellas?
Going good.
It's just another night in Texas.
Well, thank you so much for being with us. Yeah, we really appreciate the time, and we know this is, I'm sure, an emotional time of year.
It is. It is very much so.
Can you tell us a little bit about Brandon? We didn't have the privilege of knowing him, but you obviously did. Would you mind telling us a little bit about who Brandon was?
Brandon was a very spontaneous, outgoing boy, young man, grown man. He was, I think him and I had so much in common because we never met anybody that we couldn't be friends with or wanted to be friends with. And we don't lack for conversation when we're out in public or anything. We're not very shy. Brandon was a fearless boy when he came up. He started playing football when he was 4.5, 5 years old and playing baseball. He was playing – he – had went to school at Greenbrier Elementary School in South Fort Worth. He tried out for the team. The coach told him there was a very likely chance he would make it because he was only 8 years old in third grade, and tried out for the football team, and he made it, and he started on defense. And then the next 2 years, he quarterbacked them to what would have been the city championship. And they, even though they fell short both years, Brandon had an incredible arm. He was a very gifted athlete. Very good student, very smart, very, very intelligent. He was a real, real good boy. And, growing up, as he got older, you know, he got more stubborn. I like to say that was, he took after his mom in that respect, but we all know that's probably not true. So,
careful.
Yes, I know. I can feel the daggers, but, no, Brandon was very outgoing. He loved life. He was just everything he did. He did all the way.
You mentioned Brandon's mother, your wife. She is perched behind you, sort of like an angel on your shoulder, right there. how's it going?
Good.
I like Tim said, we'd never actually met. Obviously, we've never met him, but you are the spitting image of him. You look just like him.
Yes, and as does the little boy. I got a little quick story for you. For instance, we went hunting. We went deer hunting last weekend, and my grandson Nolan, which is Brandon's oldest boy, and he goes every year, and like we will Thanksgiving weekend. But we got to the gas station and got out, and I was getting gas. Well, we walked up, and I let him get something out of the side box there at the station. And the people at the gas station know me because I drive a company truck and my regular truck and gas there all the time at Kroger. And the lady come on the loudspeaker and said, "Oh, look, you brought your mini me today." And I said, "Well, this is my grandson." But yes, we all heavily favor each other. Very much so.
We have we have someone in the message area, Brock. By the way, this message area, this is sort of the Crawl Space family. They join us every Thursday night. They follow all of the shows, but this is where everybody can come together and they all talk. And it's a really good family that we've come to depend on every Thursday night. But Brock said photos of Brandon always show a zest for life, and that is such a great point. Every time Tim and I work on a case where there's a missing person and you type that person's name into Google, you'll find something that's like the car or, you know, the scene or something like that. When you type Brandon's name in, it's always the pictures of him with his family smiling. He's the picture of him fishing. You know, he's so happy he caught that fish. Like those are the first pictures you see. Is that pretty indicative of how he lived his life? Just like a zest for life?
Yes, I'd say so. He wasn't very much of a downer person. He didn't. We didn't raise our children or anything else in a very negative part in life. We liked everything to be upbeat and happy you know, even though there are some sad times and you have to get through those, but for the most part, we're a very upbeat and never fail to say, I love you. That's something that really we brought out in our children and the rest of our family and everybody around us. But Brandon was really, really into life. Brandon loved life. That's what's so hard about all this, you know, with him missing is that, you know, just the loss of space there is just, it's very, you know, to form on how, you know, I can lay just like last night, his birthday. I dream half the night. Every year, it never fails. And it's about him. It's, you know, and I thrive and well, I thank Jason every time I talk to Jason or we message each other, I let him know how much I appreciate all his effort and time and everything that he puts in because, you know, not a lot of people pick up the torch and do stuff like this. And Jason's been here every step of the way with us. And we love Jason like a family member, you know, and we, you know, he's a very, 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 very good guy, very humble person. And it's just good for us to have somebody like that on the case trying to help us with this.
And when did you meet Jason? How far back do you go?
I would say, I'm not sure the first time.
I can't remember.
The first time.
I think it was at the candlelight vigil, that first candlelight vigil. And it was like a month or two after he went missing.
Yes. Yeah, that had to be it. The very first one. I was trying to think back to the teenage years, but I don't recollect seeing Jason then.
I didn't get to spend much time with Brandon outside of high school. So yeah,
And at his high school, I mean, when we talk about his high school and stuff, he was pretty, I mean, when I was around a lot of it, he was Brandon was, as they refer to in Texas, he was a jock. So, and really, I mean, Brandon wasn't so much a jock because he hung around everybody. I mean, he was a social person. Brandon loved sports, don't get me wrong, and he thrived at sports and everything, but his mind didn't stop at sports people personalities. He liked different types of people and different, you know, if he saw somebody in trouble, he helped them. If he saw somebody struggling, he helped them, you know, and he always had a laugh. I mean, he was a very, very, very big character. He wasn't afraid to voice his opinion about things if you were doing somebody wrong or anything either in that respect. And like I said, even from the time he was six years old, stepping on the field when he first, excuse me, filled out in pads, he was fearless when it came to hitting or taking up for somebody or standing up for his own self or anybody else around. That was just his personality. That's how he was.
I can personally attest to that because that's, you know, really how I became acquainted with him was, you know, I've said this several times, when you're a very skinny 96 pound goofy looking kid, you're an easy target for some of the schoolyard ruffians. And I can remember one time I was getting quite a bit of flack and Brandon stepped in and he's had my respect ever since that.
Wow. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, yeah. This happened?
Well, I can remember one time, again, it was a day I was catching flack and I got smacked into a locker pretty hard and I fell down, my crap went everywhere. And I remember looking up and there's this hand outstretched. And I didn't know it was Brandon until I looked up and he took my hand. He picked me up off the ground. And he said, "Hey man, don't even worry about that. Those people never win in life." He picked me up, dusted me off, handed me my stuff back. And said, "Man, we'll see you later. Don't let that crap bother you." And, that's the person I'm trying to fight to help bring home, you know.
That's the kind of guy he was. There's been a lot of things said, and you know, we don't we don't pay attention to a lot. You know, I go on Brandon's page and I read stuff and everything. And I will say for 88 to 90% of it is very good. But, you know, you got that 10% out there that's got their own thoughts and their own things that they got and they want to go on and, you know, about, you know, the drugs and this and that. And the bottom line is he's a missing person. He's a missing human being. And if you would have had a flat tire on the side of the road somewhere, Brandon would have pulled up behind you and helped you change that. With traffic blowing by you or stacked up or whatever, he would have stopped and helped you, or a lady coming out Dory to help the door open for her. That's just the kind of person Brandon was. Brandon wasn't this guy running around with warrants for his arrest and on drugs and, you know, everything else. Although to say, you know, and not trying to print a perfect picture of him either. But Brandon was a lovable, good-natured, hard-working guy, a family man. And that's why Jason and I, we go back with these things we talk about with each other that, you know, he just wouldn't be missing on his own, because it's just with his children here and everything. Come on now. You leave money in the bank and everything else, and you do, I mean, you just come up. You just take off with somebody else and say goodbye life, hello new life? I don't think so. That isn't the child we raised. I don't care how many drugs he was on or whatever they think he was doing. He had never, ever, ever, ever done anything like that. That's just impossible.
And please don't apologize. Please don't think like that it's uncomfortable. Like, if you're comfortable talking about it, that's totally fine. Don't ever apologize by saying he wasn't a perfect person. No one's a perfect person. I think it's even more important that we look for people who are imperfect, because those are real people. There's no one out there who has gotten into trouble, or there's no one out there who's never gotten into trouble. Like, please show me somebody who's experienced life totally clean slate, you know, and then they go to their grave and they say, I never did anything wrong, never wronged anybody. You know, because there's a drug element, it's not about Brandon, you know, it's a deeper thing, you know, it's a deeper issue. It doesn't speak to anyone's actual, like, human nature. And just because someone's not perfect doesn't mean that nothing is going to be pretty. We talk about true crime all the time. It's not pretty. That's what it is. You know, I just hope you know that people like Jason and the stuff that we do on our show, the people that we look for, like we understand that, and everybody in this chat room understands this too, and they all have you back.
And I appreciate y'all so much, and the things that y'all do is just amazing. And yeah, I mean, going back to that, no, Brandon wasn't the perfect person, but you know, it's a whole different situation too when, you know, here comes Christmas and he's got children and he's not here, and guys like Jason are going to fight every step of the way to help bring him home. And the things that y'all are doing to bring awareness, you know, that, you know, I had the lady here on Channel 5 that interviewed me 3 years ago out at the park on Trinity River, and you know, for Channel 5 here in Dallas-Fort Worth area, and she said that, you know, the people are always amazed by the interest that Brandon has. There's a lot of people that wonder what happened to Brandon. And that's what we want to do, and y'all done, and to help us and bring the notice that, you know, hey, Brandon's not been found. He's still out there somewhere. It's not, people just don't, the world's not flat. He didn't walk off the edge and just, you know, fall. He's still out there. And shows like yours and the things that Jason and Lou and everybody else has done is further just example of the caring nature of people to not let this go and to try to bring Brandon home.
Yeah, you're so right about that. Yeah, that's absolutely right. He is out there somewhere. He did not fall off the face of the earth. And A lot of great points in the chat room here. Shannon says that one of the best indicators of what Brandon was really like is that Jason, right here, Jason Watts, has spent all this time trying to find him and donating his own time. And that's just huge. So thank you to Jason. Thank you for the chat room for pointing that out, too.
Ledessa is actually here now. That was she just let me know on the phone. So I'm going to hop off my spot and give it to her. I'll pop back in whenever whoever's ready is ready.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Jason.
Thank you, buddy.
Also, I don't know if I can make the full hour without cracking. This might be the one, guys. I looked up it. Jason got choked up. I looked up. It was 9:12. I'm like, really? It's only been 12 minutes.
It's a really, it's hard to keep choking down.
Right. Right.
Hi, Ledessa. How are you?
I'm good. How are y'all?
Doing pretty good.
Hello, sure. How you doing?
Yeah, Mom.
She's right there. She's in and out of the camera.
clearly not shy.
Well, thank you so much.
My heart, like that really... I mean, he's told me before, but, you know, it always, you know, we try to, you know, now that the kids are getting older, we're trying to represent like what we are when we were younger. And we were always, I can't wait one day for the boys to like understand more and, you know, hear stuff like that.
Thank you so much for spending some time with us here today, Ledessa. And we really appreciate your time. And I know it must be a bit of an emotional few days here, too.
Yeah, it was, but we went to Chili's last night for Brandon's birthday, and we, you know, got some Mexican food, and we got some candles, and, you know, the kids ate a lot, so I try to do something every, you know, to celebrate Brandon, so it was good.
And how old are the kids?
Dustin's 14, you know, my stepdaughter, she's 17, Mackenzie, but she lives in Joshua, so she wasn't there, unfortunately. We have a 17-year-old, and then 14-year-old is Destiny, and then Nolan is 9, he just turned 9, and then Wenton is 7, about to be 8. So we're all getting older, just growing up so fast. Mm-hmm.
No, I was just going to ask if you've got any favorite memories of Brandon.
Oh, yeah, lots. We went camping a lot, and he didn't care if it was like 100 degrees outside. He's like, pack your stuff, we're going camping. I'm like, all right, we're going camping. But fishing and stuff like that, just being outside in the nature and stuff. And then, you know, he would do sweet things like sometimes, like, you know, wake up when we go camping. And he's like, let's watch the sun come up. And I was like, okay, that's nice. So, no, he was just funny. And we parent a lot the same, so it was pretty, you know, easier, you know, in ways. So
we were saying before how he just sort of had every picture you see of him, it's like a zest for life, and there's a picture of him fishing. But I just remembered this picture of him with this gigantic wrench. And I remember thinking, and he's got this giant smile on his face, and he's got this wrench that's like the size of my car. And I remember thinking, like, if I was there in that uniform with that wrench in what clearly is 150-degree heat, I would not be smiling. Like, I would actually tell someone, do not take my picture. Why was he carrying a wrench so big, by the way?
It was in the oil field, and it was for his job. They were off location. He was just so proud of that, you know, to show me. And I'm like, I've never seen a wrench. It's pretty big. So, you know, because it's different when we lived in West Texas, because they had like, you know, all kinds of different animals and what we, you know, because it's dry. So, but he was really proud of it. So,
yeah, that's funny. You talk about the English accent, and there's a video of Brandon floating around out there that he was out there in the field, matter of fact, and a gecko, probably a different type of lizard. It was a lot longer, and it showed Brandon. He was up on a rock, and Brandon's down by the gecko, and he goes into this Scottish accent. Oh, what you doing today, lad? You know, and it's just, I mean, just so hilarious that he you know, and he videoed his phone having this conversation with a gecko. You know, it's too funny.
It was a horny toad too.
That might have been the horny toad. That was the horny toad. You're right.
I know, we never really saw him until we moved out there, and then we would see him all the time. So he's like, and he sent me the video. He's like, this is the coolest thing ever. I'm like, okay, that's good.
That's amazing.
Snakes, all the time of snakes. I'm like, I hate snakes. Why snakes?
Yeah, very much ablive. Very much.
Nice. Ledessa, when did you, you and Brandon went back to like high school, right? You've known each other pretty much since you've had like formative memories, right?
Yeah, we got together when I was 15, he was 16, and Mackenzie was already born, so she was really young.
He was two.
Who?
He was 8 months. I'm sorry, I just got corrected.
No. Mackenzie was born in July. We got together in September. I didn't get to meet Mackenzie until like later on. So,
yeah.
And, you know, he was always trying to holler at me, and he's like, you don't know who I am. I was like, why am I supposed to? You know, he was just smooth, you know, he was smooth. So.
Yeah. Was it his athletic prowess? Is that why he assumed you knew who he was?
I'm not really the type of person like that. I like personalities. He was funny. He made me laugh. So I'm big about personalities. Like, let's go away. Personalities stay forever. So that's how I feel about it. And I have a big personality, so it takes somebody that has a big one to, you know.
And what grade is this? You said 15 and 16, so that's...
Well, I was a sophomore, and I think he was supposed to be a junior, but I think he was a sophomore. I don't really know. We're in high school, grew up, being wild and stuff. So,
and sorry to keep going on this, but the whole scene is really endearing to me. You said that he would holler at you. Is this something like in the hallways, or was it like?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think it mattered.
It doesn't matter.
In class, he would holler at her and get in trouble. It wouldn't matter. Not to him, it wouldn't. It didn't matter to him to embarrass her either. So.
No, I never forget. He asked for my phone number, and I was like, I don't know you. I don't know if I should give you my phone number. And he had another girl's phone number on there. And I was like, I'm not giving you my phone number now. He's like, I don't want to be a player no more. So we would say that was our song. I know, it's goofy, but I gave him his number. And then we had lots of kids, you know. So
you also said that you went to Chili's for his birthday. Is that like a favorite place, like Mexican food?
Yeah, well, his favorite place is on the border, but where I live, it's not the best. You know, when you go there sometimes. So, but Chili's, he liked Chili's too. So he drank every once in a while. So I drank a margarita for him. So, and I'm on a low calorie diet. So, but no, it was good.
Well, I love Chili's too. What about the Cowboys? Bradley, you seem like a big Cowboys fan. Was Brandon a big Cowboys fan too?
Most definitely. Most definitely. I sit in my dad's recliner starting at 3 watching the Cowboys in 1964. My son very much did the same thing starting in 1990, sitting in my lap watching the Cowboys with me. So it's a family tradition. It's very much so. Yeah, we're big Cowboy fans, and hey, thick or thin, winning or losing, we're not bandwagon jumpers. We ride the bad train as well as we do the good train.
Right.
Right now, this bed train has been on the track a little bit too long.
Yeah.
that's a long train.
It has. It's good when it's good. We had a pool table and a game room in a neighborhood when Brandon was growing up. And I had a pool table in there and a dartboard and so on. And I mean, he was an avid pool player. We would have, in the course of 92 and 93 and 95 seasons when we lived there, that was just, every Sunday was a watching party at the house. So it was just a his childhood. Of course, then he was, you know, he wasn't but 8, 9, 10, 11 when that was going on. So, you know, he, I mean, we loved the Cowboys. Brandon loved all sports. Brandon loved the Mavericks too. I mean, he's a big, in high school, when Ledesma and him met and stuff, he was playing basketball. And Brandon, I mean, his calves were about the size of a football, you know? So going up and down the court, Brandon wasn't the fleetest of feet. Now, he could throw the ball a country mile, but he wasn't the fastest guy in the world either. But going up and down the court with that basketball and guys trying to get around him and his big old calves, I mean, you just can never imagine just watching Brandon going up and down the basketball court. But he could shoot. He was a good athlete.
I think before we actually went live, I'm not sure, I can't remember, you showed a picture of you and Brandon. Yeah. Can you show that again and describe it?
This is Brandon and I, their house, him and Celeste's house in San Angelo in 2012, the last Christmas we got to have together. We were watching, getting ready to watch football that day. And, that's me with the jersey on and him with the star on. And, it seemed like that when Brandon picked up his family and left from here and went to San Angelo, that Brandon and I were always very, very close, but oh man, it just seemed like we got so much closer when he moved away. Him being apart from me is like that bond that's just, you know, it's not broken, but you miss something. It's a missing link that's in your soul that, you know, when you're used to seeing somebody on a daily basis and it switches to being, hey, we're coming down this weekend. And, you know, it's a 4-hour drive for us there and then back home, and the same for them to come up here. And, you know, that picture is one of the last pictures we had taken. And I have one that when I come on with y'all the next time, I'll get a few other ones. But I have Brandon up on Sugar Tree Golf Course in outside of Weatherford, Texas, where Brandon's up on the tee box and taking a shot with his driver with his cousin behind him. And I mean, it's just that's how we bonded, you know, just the things that we did together. And then me and this girl here are fairly close too. I've known her since she's about 14 years old, and she's like a daughter to us. I mean, she is our daughter. It's not like she is to us. She's, Ledesma's our daughter. She's our girl. She has been for a long time.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsor. Thanks to our sponsors, and now we're back to the program.
And when Jason was on, he was talking about how Brandon had kind of picked him up after some guys had given him some flack and gave him some advice. And Bradley, is that something that your family that was, you know, how you were raised and then you raised Brandon that way? And did Brandon try to instill that in his kids as well?
Well, sure. We were from the time I was a child, and I'm sure my dad and, you know, in our generation and in our family, we were always taught to don't be the guy that throws the first punch. Don't be the guy to sit and run your mouth on somebody. But, you know, we'll only take so much until, you know, we will make a stand. And yes, Brandon was very much so like that. He didn't like seeing people pushed around, and Brandon did not like bullies. And we never have. And my children, along with my brother and my sisters, and along with my wife's family, we don't tolerate bullies, never have. And that's that. In that instance, I'm sure that's where with Jason, that Brandon, you know, that part of the communication between them two met eye to eye. He didn't like seeing somebody done like that, and he wasn't going to stand for it. And he gave Jason that helping hand. And love, did you know that there's are people out there that never forget stuff like that? And Jason is a perfect example of a guy like that. You know, he never forgot. Somebody reached down and gave him a helping hand, and now Brandon needs a helping hand, and Jason's never forgot that, and Jason's been there, and he is very much a crusader to helping us find Brandon.
There's been a lot of searches lately too, and I know there was one that recently happened. How does that, I guess, like do you interact with those searches? How hands on are you with those?
I'm very protective over my father-in-law, and you know, because they do have older people and they're stubborn, so they would want to, you know, but they're allowed to come out, and I made sure that I tried to tell him to stay on the ATV, and I keep telling him, you know, because I know him and my, you know, Pawpaw, we call him Pawpaw, that was Brandon's grandfather, and they're stubborn, so I have to just be like, y'all can come, but let's, you know, because I just get real protective over them.
And that's
and my mother-in-law, my mother-in-law, she would not listen. So that's why sometimes she has to stay because she doesn't listen sometimes.
I guess this is the part where I pop my teeth out and say, let me tell you something, Sonny.
No. That's my mother-in-law. My mother-in-law is that was her son, and she's a go-getter, and I would be the same way. So, you know, I'm thankful for all the community that's helped us and all these volunteers and these people that come around. And you know, I've just met so many people that, you know, and you know, you get your bad on, you know, people, like I get cussed out sometimes, or people think that Brandon's like, this is a makeup story. And I'm like, I wish it was, you know, I wish I was waking up, you know, and I didn't know about missing person until this happened. And, you know, you see these like TV shows and you're like, and then you're like, you're that, you know, it's your family member that's on there. And unfortunately, I have a lot of regret. I try to find Brandon. I still try to find him, but I was so young. I was 25 and he was 26. So I didn't know like about missing persons. A lot of people are not educated on this. And unless you like have somebody or you know somebody, you start being a part of it. And you need to be more, you know, because let me tell you, what is it? 7 out of 10 adults that go missing, 7 are not alive. Only the 3 go missing on their own. And that it's crazy. Like every 30 minutes, somebody goes missing in the whole world. Like we need to like do better. And, you know, and men and women and children, like we need to do better as a community. And that's how I feel, like, you know, and I have, with everything that went on, like I can blame this person, that person, I can blame myself, I can blame everybody, but I was really young. I didn't know. And now that I'm older, I get more educated on like the way that we should have done it at first. And we're going to help other missing persons, families and children. And I'd like something for counseling for them, or, you know, and help people, because, you know, that's the only thing we can do. And Brandon loved helping people, so we have to do better, you know. And Brandon's always going to be remembered no matter what, if he's here or not, like every day. I mean, I have my kids out just like him half the time, so the loss of pride when they get in trouble.
Yeah. I'm so glad that you mentioned we have to do better as a community, because it really does boil down to that, right? It boils down to it starts with what you instill in your kids, in your family, what they go out to instill in others, the way Brandon did with Jason. Like Brandon never intended that to resonate with Jason. He wanted to help him, but it unintentionally resonated with somebody else. And I'm so glad you mentioned that community, because that's what it is. Now Jason's helping somebody, and someone who knows Jason's going to help somebody, and it could be the smallest thing or it could be the biggest thing, but it's the community fabric that really needs to tighten up.
I honestly believe that Bront don't know who we are as a family, and they're really, you know, 75% of them are mostly retired, because it's kind of like where you retire, you know, there's not a lot around. And I think they just don't know our family, and they just hear all this media and stuff like that. That honestly, I wish that they would just like make a plan to meet us and talk to us and tell them, and, you know, have those conversations, like what can we do better to make you feel comfortable when we're, you know, trying to find someone. And, you know, and it hurts me sometimes, and, you know, and my kids, but I try to put the emotional part when I'm talking to them to do better, because at the end of the day, I could blame that, you know, we're going to find Brandon, and we're not going to give up until we do find him. Like, until my kids know where their dad is, we're not going to give up. So, and I promise my kids that. And every day they ask me questions. We're getting older, so, you know, the girls know everything. I'm very honest. The girls know everything because they are older to understand things. The boys, they don't really know. They just know, you know, some things. And I'm starting to come more and more and tell them stuff and, you know. But every day we pray before we eat. And, you know, they always pray to find their dad.
Also, there's back when all this happened, I'll go back 4 to 5 years ago when the Help Find Brandon Lawson page had been up and rolling for a while when Ladessa got that started. And unfortunately, she had to back off a lot of stuff because people evidently would not, you know, stop harassing her and stuff to a certain degree. But I put a quote in there one time, and I've gotten a lot of responses from it, too, that, you know, you have to realize that he's got an 8 and 9-year-old boy. And I'm not just specifically saying about the boys, because the daughters, too, don't get me wrong, but the 8 and 9-year-old, and then my daughter's two boys, which are 3 and 8, and then my other son has a 11-year-old, and, you know, then we've got the nephews. We've got boys that are in their age category and everything else. And I wrote a deal on the Help Finding Brandon Lawson page that, you know, one day the people in Bront will understand when more than likely these boys are going to grow up and they're going to pick up the torch because they're going to want to find their dad, their cousin, their uncle, you know, and they're not going to leave it alone because we're not leaving it alone. And they're going to come down there to Bront and they're going to want questions answered about why has he not been found, and why didn't we do this and why didn't we do that? And sooner or later, you know, it has to, you know, be brought to attention. But yes, my father-in-law and I and my nephew and my daughter and her boyfriend and stuff, we went down there and helped on the search. As Ladessa said, we stayed pretty much in the ATV. My nephew and them, they got out and walked search with Jason and everything. But that land out there is just horrific. I mean, if you ever, the next time we're there, I'll take a screenshot of one and send it to y'all about the terrain out there. I mean, the cacks, I mean, to walk through some of that part, when Jason and them, just understand, when Jason and these guys and Ladessa and them came back out from there, they're scratched and cut up. There's cactus needles and everything. I mean, they're cut and scratched up from going through this stuff. And this is through the light stuff. There's some stuff you can't even make it through. When Brandon came up missing, they had been in a 3-year drought down in San Angelo and through that part of the country. Now they've had rain and everything else for the last couple of years and everything. And that is really grown. It's very dense out there. Hilly, very much mountainous and cactus and just a horrible terrain out there. Rock and, you know, you're coming down a hill, you take a slip on a rock slide down through there and land in a bunch of cactus and you're in trouble. And, you know, just to be example to anything and all the wild animals and stuff, to, you know, we've answered stuff about what could have happened to Brandon. You know, do you think this, do you think that? Well, sure, Brandon could have been bit by a rattlesnake. Brandon could have been trapped by a bunch of hogs. Brandon could have, you know, fell in a well that somebody started to dig one time and didn't cover up properly. There's a rock canyon he could have fell into. And there's a number of places or things that could have happened to Brandon. And, you know, we've had people at the UTA, at the UNTA place in Denton, where we go every year for the Missing Persons Convention in the Fort Worth area. And they've helped, and there's a man up there that's tried to map out certain parts of that area. But until you can get ground search on all that stuff, it's really a hard thing to say, you know, that you can't find him.
I think that's really important to describe the terrain like you did, because a lot of people who are looking into Brandon's case, especially us, we're from the Northeast, we don't understand that type of terrain. We hear desert, we hear, you know, Texas, like landlocked area, and we think wide open. We think, you know, sand and dry, but to hear that, it's really telling. And It also opens your mind to other scenarios, because not even with just Brandon's case, but most, like a lot of the missing persons cases that we look into, we have a lot of community members who will, or citizen detectives who will start to put together a story that doesn't really exist because they don't know the area, like the geographic area. And they'll say, well, why would that happen? Because of this. Like, well, you don't know, because, you know, someone says they're bleeding. It doesn't mean they're bleeding because they were attacked. It might mean they're bleeding because they just ran through a bunch of cactus. And, you know, so it does help to hear that.
Yes. Have you ever come in contact with a mesquite tree? Do you know what a mesquite tree is?
No. I know mesquite barbecue sauce is pretty good.
They put wood in barbecue and stuff, but it's a tree that will grow up and it will grow up to 14, 15 feet and have branches all over it. But it also sometimes has these 3-inch spines on it, which are needles, and they're thorns. I mean, they're very hard, and they're very painful. And also you have to realize that when you go to talking about cactus too, cactus has a certain degree of poison. When it sticks you and it hurts and stuff, it don't just hurt for a minute. It hurts for a while. It's got a degree of poison in it when, you know, that it. And so, I mean, there's so many factors in this with the heat, you know, heat exhaustion. You don't have any water. You're just out exposed in the area. You're talking about in a night when maybe one night during the day, it gets up to 105. And the coolest you get at night is 82 degrees. That's still pretty warm. No, that's not cool. I mean, by any means, especially if you got any kind of humidity in the air, it's, you know, but yeah, we're not going to give up. There's other people down there that Jason is constantly trying to get in touch with and talk to. And the other thing I was going to mention also is, you know, Jason went out of his way. He called LaDessa. He called me and talked to me and my wife and stuff and said, hey, look, do you mind if I do a GoFundMe deal to help Brandon get this and everything? And I said, look, I said, we're not going to be in a part of the name of this, because the first thing people want to attach to this is that we're trying to get money and stuff from people. So if that's what you want to do, then you do. And Jason did that and put that money up for that guy to come down there and fly those drones over that and take all those pictures and everything. Jason did that fully on his own. And we involved, yes. But as far as the money goes, that Jason did the GoFundMe. And that guy, he's just incredible. It's unbelievable. I can't believe he can work a 40-hour job as much as he does and helps with Brandon.
And has two daughters. And a beautiful wife.
He's really nice. He's a godsend.
Yeah, he's something else.
I just believe, honestly, it's just so much land. And, you know, I've talked to a couple of the landowners. This one guy, I'll never forget. He was like, you'll never find him all year. He's like, there's so much land. It's like a needle in a haystack. And I'll never forget he said that. But I think we could have searched so many areas. We just need to start over and search little by little. And that's what I believe. And I told Jason that. I was like, you know, it has to be foot search. And unless we pick up every rock and see, you never know. Because unfortunately, when it rains there, it doesn't rain that much, but we've actually got a lot more rain. It's like clay, like paste, clay. So that does make me nervous, you know, and stuff like that. So, and he could be somewhere over the fence and we just go a couple feet and we don't know if he's out there. Like it's like, we don't know where to start, because the 911 call was by the truck, but and then his phone was pinged, and it's just the towers out there are totally different. So, because if 911, if you do make a 911 call, it doesn't matter what tower or what phone you have. So it's 35 miles off any radius, but not the 911 call. So, you know, it's like latitude, longitude, and stuff like that. So we don't really know where to start half the time just by the truck. So, but when we did that search, it did make me feel a lot better, because I was so scared that he fell in this brush, because what they did was they made like an oil company, like a water transfer company, and they have all this brush and trees, and they pushed it all, you know, to do that open space. But they were really nice. They let us search, and said, you know, we're welcome to search again. Such respectful men. They even came out and helped us a little bit, you know, and they told us about their life stories, and, you know, it was really good. So
how many searches have you been a part of, Ladessa?
Okay, I've done, when Brandon first went missing, I was by myself, I had the kids. I hollered from him all that next day, like all up and down. And then my father-in-law, he couldn't come yet. And so we had to wait everybody to come Sunday. Wait, no, Saturday night they came. Because Brandon went missing Thursday night, Friday morning. And I kept on telling everybody, I was like, something is not right. Brandon does not do that. Because honestly, he's mad at me. You know, he'll cool down. Or if he did, but he will always contact my father-in-law. Like, even me, like, he's our... just our person that we contact all the time, you know. He's the one that we tell him all of our problems, poor thing. But no, just, you know, and something wasn't right, and I kept on telling the police, and they were like, he ran off with another woman, he don't want to be found. So it's like, you know, I just, and of course they say that, you know, first, and, you know, I'm like, something's not right. And, you know, so Brock asked me, Ladessa, do you have one solid theory as to what happened that night? I do not. All I know is from what, when Brandon left the house, that's all I know. I missed his phone call. I regret that all the time. He didn't leave a voicemail. I try to like say it was an accident, something maybe, because I can't imagine somebody hurting Brandon. Because that, you know, that's a person I love, and it just would hurt me. But, you know, sometimes you have to make yourself, you know, because I would read everybody's comments for the first 2 years. It was awful. Like, the first two years was awful. I was working two jobs, raising kids. It was awful. Like, I couldn't even think, and I'd stay up, and I didn't sleep for 2 years hardly. And I had all these messages, and some people were hateful. And I really did try to not argue with people, because it upset me, but me doing that's not going to find Brandon. Me arguing with you, taking breath out of time and my energy to argue with you is not going to help me find Brandon. You know what I mean? And a lot of them, they don't know what kind of people we were. They don't know what Brandon was. I mean, Brandon went missing at 26. He didn't get to be the man that, you know, you remember from 18, 21 to 25 to 30. To 35, like, he didn't get those stages. Like, you grow, and he was 26. He was so young, you know? So we both were. And, you know, Brandon was really good about sports. So all my kids are in sports all the time. We're so busy with sports all the time. I try to do that. He's still here too, and respect him the way we would parent. And so, and they're doing pretty good. So I'm happy that they're happy. Like, at the end of the day, after 2 years, I had to wake up and be like, they lost their dad. They don't normally lose their mom, because it was pretty bad. But mine is, I always put, you know, the kids first and the elderly first.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you brought that up about his age, and I think people really need to see that. Like, I remember myself at 26, and I there's no way I would have like a thought of anything like responsible. And to see Brandon and pictures of him with his kids at that age, and it's really commendable. On top of trying to figure out like just how to be an adult, I mean, without kids, right? Like, you're 26, you're just trying to figure out how to be an adult.
Yeah.
And anyone's looking into this case, you can't use those things against him. You can't say that one thing led to something else and that's the solution, because seriously, between the ages of like 18 and 30, for God's sake, like, you're that close to something happen. Like, think about the things that have happened in my life, like anyone's life. One thing, one decision that you made could have been a completely different future for you, you know? And people need to understand that. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, I tell my kids sometimes, I'm like, you know, that one phone call has changed my life, you know? And, you know, it just feels like that. And people don't understand that. And honestly, out of all this, I'm so appreciative about things. Like, honestly, I am so appreciative of people. I make sure when I talk to anybody that I love them. I say I love people, you know, that Like, never told me that, because that's how I am now. Because you never know the difference you make in people's life. You never know, you know, the love and what people have been through. Like, you know, so you just be a better person. That's what I teach my kids. And I teach them, if you're, we all go through hard stuff. Everybody has a tough life, but you got to make the best out of it. And my goal in life is not what kind of person I am or anything, what kind of mother I am. And that's just me, you know, because I want them to be more than just a story. You know, they're going to have their own kids one day, and they're going to, you know, tell their kids about their dad and this and stuff like that and be aware. So, you know, I believe that, you know, I don't know why this happened, and I wish it never did. And sometimes I feel like I'm living a dream, you know, but I wish we just, my thing is just closure of just finding him right now. Just like, you know, because it's hard. It's because, you know, birthdays, Christmas, all these things, and all my, you know, my children, they're, you know, getting awards, sports and all that stuff. Somewhere to visit to, like, say, you know what, my dad's, this is my dad. So
this, the other thing I was going to say, and as she was touching on what that man asked about, you know, about Brandon that night. Look, none of us know. Anything we say is total speculation. We don't know what happened. We know that we miss and we love Brandon. We can think of I can think of right off the hand 15 different scenarios, and I can narrow it down to 3 that possibly could have happened, but we don't know. I know when we showed up that Sunday morning, the type of resistance that we were shown to looking for Brandon when we were met at the Town and Country store that morning, there was a pretty large group of us, and to me anyway. And we were met right then by the authority in the county, and we were let know, you know, if I catch you going across the fence, you will be arrested. And so that's the type of response we had for the first 2 to 3 years going through this. But, you know, needless to say, we've had, and if I get a chance to talk with you guys some other time off there and everything, I'll let you know. We've had some other things come up, some other leads, and that, you know, people think of just almost anything to get you, you know, drawn in to an equation of something that could have happened. You know, from, I mean, I could go on right now for 3 or 4 things that I've heard and been told, you know, but from phone calls that I've received, a phone call to my father-in-law the day of Thanksgiving. The day of Thanksgiving from Mexico, telling us, you know, if we had money that we could talk to Brandon the next day, and they would call us back at 1 o'clock if we'd send this much money, just stuff like that. I mean, you know, the harassment that she's faced and been tortured with, you know, from different people and the different things that we go through as a family, you know, people, there's a lot of people out there that only have one thing in mind, and that's trying to cultivate and make good off people's sorrows. And that's unfortunate, but it happens, and you just have to deal with it and just go on. You know, it's a hard thing to deal with, and you know, you really sometimes sit there, oh, I'd really like to get my hands on that person, but then again, you know, that just shows you how much beneath them it would be if you did, because they're not worth the time or effort to spend on. Our time and effort needs to be spent on finding Brandon, not worrying about what everybody else thinks or does. All the naysayers can step to the side and say what they want. The people who fill the screen, I've been reading some of this. This is where the love is. This is the people that care, you know. And that's what we look at. I do. The other stuff, I'll read a couple of sentences. If it's negative, I'm not trying to read that anymore. I'm not into arguing with people. I'm 59 and I don't have time for that. And you know, these grandkids of mine, I want them to, you know, you were saying to this perspective about, you know, them growing up and saying, you know, how was my dad about this? I love to be asked those questions. You know, my grandson, Brandon's oldest boy, Nolan, has 150 questions, and I want to have 150 answers about his daddy. Was his daddy like this? Was his daddy like that? And I know a lot of the answers. The ones that I don't, I just tell him I really don't know. And they're in very mean that I don't know, but, you know, and we want it to be, you know, he loves his daddy. The little one, the one that was, he wasn't even a year old when his daddy come out missing, you know. He loves his daddy too. And, you know, the girls and all of his family does. And they, you know, the main goal that we all have here is to bring Brandon home. That's our goal. That's what we need. Closure. Mm-hmm. Closure would be great.
Absolutely.
You know, Pawpaw is Brandon's grandfather. We call him Pawpaw, you know, we all do. But every time we would show up for Thanksgiving and Christmas, he would just look at us and just have tears in his eyes because Brandon wasn't behind us or next to us. And when he looks at my son, because everybody knows Nolan was just like Brandon, spin image, just like Brandon, and acts like him. And, you know, everybody gets teary-eyed when they see him. And, you know, he said something to me one day. He's like, I don't understand why people get sad when they see me sometimes. I said, they're not sad. They're just happy. They're happy because you look so much like your dad. He's like, you know, so it's like, and I'm really protective over the family. I will handle a lot of the, you know, if it's true or not. And I don't tell them unless I know for sure, you know, because I have respect. And honestly, I just don't want, I think my hopes have been so much up of finding Brandon and like this key and that key, it messes with you because, and it comes out not to be a dead end, you know? So we just, you know, come together as a family and we do the best we can. And, you know, that's all we can do. And, you know, every family member misses Brandon, loves him.
I have a question for you, Bradley. You said that you had a dream about Brandon over his birthday, and you said that it's the same dream, or is it like a similar dream? And
do you mind sharing that?
I've had the same reoccurring dream since the first time that I dreamed it, that Brandon came up missing. It's I can tell you, it sounds kind of fluky, and it's fluky to me because I dream it, but it's me and my father. My father is dressed in a white suit, and I don't know what I'm dressed. I'm dressed, but I'm in the boat, and it's particular like a flat bottom boat, and we're going across a body of water, and we're going to get Brandon, and that's how the dream starts. Us in the boat, and we're going across, and that's how the dream. That's how I wake up every year. I dream the same dream, And one day I hope I can stop having that dream. It's, you know, having a son is not a lot of people have the relationship that I have with my boys. And, you know, my boys, we spend a lot of time, in the outdoors. We spend a lot of time together. Our whole family does that. And we, you know, Brandon was always such a spark plug that I don't know how to put it. Brandon was, like you said earlier, he finds joy in everything he does. And to not have that joy constantly around us, you know, and as Ladessa went off to say about the family, it's not just our immediate family and everything. It's our, you have to understand that for the time these children are born until even when they're grown up, they go to their mama and pawpaws for Christmas and Thanksgiving every year. This has happened. This isn't just once in a while. This is every year that this happens. Hey, buddy. And so that all these children know each other. They're, you know, We're raised together. We're raised with them together and loving them together. Ain't no. And so they, you know, they're very much attached to each other. I'm talking about from when Brandon and all them, from when they were born and growing up. So they've done this since they were little bitty, and their children were little bitty. All of us for 30, just say my family. We've been, her and I have been married December 34 years. So for 33 years, we've done this. For the 34th, we're going to do it again. Even though we had this deal going on and everything with the COVID, we trimmed it down to where not so many people are going to be together. But, you know, it's unfortunate, but it has to be that way this year. But so here's the two yahoos right here.
How's it going, boys?
Those are my boys.
What is up?
Are you
going to
talk?
How you doing?
Hi. Tell them your name. Nope. What's your last name? Awesome. And what's your name? Miggy. Martin. Awesome. And I know my Miggy name. What's an Ethan? No? Mm-hmm. So what do you have? Tell them your name.
See you this good weekend, night. Witten. But that's what I was getting at. It's our family. That's something that they've known. And said, well, Des has been a part of that. And she knows how it's always, we've been very, very close knit. And that's, you know, if anything, the other people that are joined in this family, and then you reach one of your nieces, like marries her husband. And their family may not be so much that way as to say, I love you is easy. But by the time they've been around us 3 or 4 years or so, they're saying, I love you too, because it's instilled in them. I mean, that is something that we, and it's not just a words. We feel it, you know, because we do, we love. And that's why Brandon loved. It just wasn't words that came out of his mouth. He loved you. If Brandon was your friend, he was your friend. And if he wasn't, he was going to try to make you his friend. And, you know, that's just the way he was. And, it was very, very unusual for Brandon to be on odd with anybody.
he's got a taste of the camera. He's caught the bug.
Jason Watts. Jason says that he's got a very special guest, another very special guest here. I'm going to drop off because he wants this guest to.
Do you want
see
me to
guys.
Drop off?
No. He wants this guest, and we don't know who it is. He wants this guest to talk to the Lawsons, is what he said.
All right. Jason asked me to say a few words, and forgive me because I was really taken aback by your story, and I was definitely sniffly a little bit. So I just wanted to say that you guys are amazing, and for whatever it's worth, Brandon's story was one of the first that really stuck with me. I've seen a lot of true crime cases. I've heard a lot of true crime cases, spoken to a lot of families, and Brandon's sticks with me. And I say that because it means something. It really does. It's huge for this community when these stories stick with people. So I just wanted to give you that comfort and that it does stick with me and so many other people. And also just tell you that you guys are absolutely amazing. And that, I'm not sure what I can teach you that you don't already know, but I just want you to know from someone who, hopefully is on the other side of justice now, that it's worth it, that all of those, you know, those tears and horrible days and wonderful days and everything that comes with advocating for someone you love is 1,000% worth it. I'm just so proud of you guys, and congratulations on everything that you've accomplished. I know there's some new developments in there, and I just wanted to say I'm rooting for you, and I'm here if you need anything ever.
Thank you.
Of course.
That means a lot.
Thank you so much.
Oh, I'm so glad. And I'm honored to be the special guest because, like I said, Brandon's case has always really stuck with me. So I'm rooting for you guys, and I'm here for you.
Thank you.
Of course. All right. I'll let the host of the show get back on.
Thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate you.
Sarah has been fighting for justice for in the disappearance of her sister. And actually, her father was recently arrested in that case.
Wow.
Yeah. I've heard a lot about her and stuff like that. And that was my first
Yeah. She is part of the family, and really amazing at what she did. She really broke the mold with having a personal connection and doing what she did.
You want to say anything you remember about your dad, and it's time for bed. You have one good memory. What was it? I'm thinking, that was the coolest memory. When he gives me ice cream. You can lay down on my couch.
It's so cool to see your boys pop on here and know there's a chat room of people who are here. They don't know him. They don't know Brandon. They don't know you guys. They're here because they want to help.
That's great.
My daughter, she would come in here, but she had a volleyball game and she's wore out, so she's asleep.
That's
so
great.
They won.
I coached Edgecliff baseball for about 7-8 years. When Brandon started T-ball, I didn't have the mentality to do the little T-ballers because I'm a little bit, more up there on the motivation side. So I started coaching Mustang, which is where the 9-year-olds start pitching to, their self, not coach pitch, but the Mustang League where, the boys pitch to each other. So I took my first team then and Brandon's cousin, my wife's nephew, he's my nephew too, but he was played on that team. Well, 3-4 years into that, I got Brandon. And when Brandon reached that level, then I started coaching him. And we won the division that year. And the All-Stars were picked. And, of course, Brandon had a very, very outstanding year. But I wasn't very much liked in the league because we kind of won the league every year. And that year they had picked a different coach to coach the All-Stars. Well, Brandon wasn't picked as an All-Star. And it wasn't just the part of not getting picked an All-Star that we heard the crying. It was, and it lasted more than a day. It lasted till the next baseball season, different times. And, we don't teach Spide or anything else, but the good instance of how he was, because he was so, he wanted to win. When that All-Star team went out, and in the first division All-Star tournament they got in, they got eliminated in the first two games. And when we saw them the next year, a couple of the boys that played on that team, when Brandon saw them, said, "See, if you'd have had me, you'd have went all the way." And so that was his, he didn't hold no grudges or anything over it. But, children, they know when they're growing up, and it's part of society. Everybody wants to be part of that clique and part of that, everybody wants to be wanted and everybody wants to be liked. And, the one thing I always taught them was that, hey, just let your actions speak louder than words. Do good, play your hardest, be your best, and people are automatically going to like you. And the ones that don't, they're the ones that are the losers, not you. That's how, if anybody, that's out there listening to this, if you want to know one thing about Brandon, the one thing I can tell you is his heart was bigger than Texas.
When a person goes missing, their loved ones often find themselves overcome with worry and grief. Bruce Maitland started the 501c3 nonprofit organization Private Investigations for the Missing because he knows this feeling all too well.
When Bruce's daughter Brianna disappeared in March 2004, he was surrounded by licensed private investigators dedicated to finding her. Now his mission is to provide dedicated private investigators at no cost to other families of the missing, desperate for answers but without the financial means.
Private Investigations for the Missing needs your help. To read the mission statement, make a donation, and keep up with our blog, visit us at investigationsforthemissing.org and follow us at PI for the Missing on Twitter and Facebook and Investigations for the Missing on Instagram.
Because forever is too long to wait.